Good morning. On the phone now with a recap of yesterday's Summit County Council meeting, I have Councilmember Kim Carson. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning, Leslie.
Major item, the appeal over the cell tower dropped from the agenda. Basically, the appellant, I think, asking for a continuance. Any reason why?
You know, we don't know exactly, but we think it has something to do with they need to guarantee that they have the landowner's permission to do this. And I think there's some question over whether that landowner is still willing.
Okay. Let's see. During council comments, you asked if the council wants to revive the public lands initiative and pursue it as just a plan for Summit County. Can you give us just a bit of history here? What happened to the previous PLI?
Well, Rob Bishop worked with several counties, and it started with six rural counties. And then Summit County was invited to the table, and each county created a plan within their jurisdiction, and each plan was very different. Summit counties included expanding the Hiuwinas Wilderness by about 30,000 acres, and it also included removing some restrictions on motor vehicle travel on a couple areas that were designated roadless but really never qualified in the first place for roadless, and there were some private properties that had the right for access up there, and then created some areas where we would focus on just general reclamation and revegetation and trying to improve the watershed. And Summit County was the only county that had a consensus proposal from its stakeholders, and we worked with some of the ranchers up on the north slope of the Uintas. Some of these were actually Wyoming residents, but they were landowners in Utah. We worked with conservation groups, local elected officials and residents, and we really worked hard at bringing everybody together and first identifying what everybody's interests were. And then we worked on trying to bring that group together and coalesce around, you know, a few key values, and the utmost of that being watershed protection and enhancement, and with that, wildfire mitigation. And unfortunately, Rob Bishop's bill didn't go anywhere. And we've talked for the last 3 years since that happened about potentially running a single bill just including Summit County. And we had thought about piggybacking on the Central Wasatch bill, but we, for a number of reasons, we felt it would be better if we did one on our own. So we're just going to explore that. We're going to start by getting the original group of stakeholders together, find out, you know, has anything really changed since then? Is there anything we'd want to add or remove from our proposal? And then we'll move forward from there.
So this can be done piecemeal like this, just a Summit County plan.
Yes. In fact, Emory County just did one, and it was passed in Congress.
Okay. Councilmember Roger Armstrong commented that he'd be interested, but not if it just turns into another exercise. So how do we prevent that from happening?
Well, I think the first step, again, is to get the stakeholders back together. And if there's not the consensus that we had before, then it may not be a good time to move forward with it. However, if everybody does still feel strongly that they're supportive of it, then we need to look at the time that it would take staff and the council and think about how that works in with our work plan that we already have set for this year. And, you know, that may mean we kind of start some of the legwork on it now, but really focus on it next year. I just don't know. You know, we don't know what that's going to look like yet.
Okay. Let's see. An east side ordinance for the adaptive reuse of historic structures passed pretty quickly. The discussion was a little bit longer for updated lighting regulations for the Snyderville Code and east side code. So do these ordinances have identical language? And if not, why are we doing things differently?
Well, the reason we have two planning commissions, one for the east side and one for the Snyderville Basin, is so we can do things differently. We know at times there's been different areas of emphasis and different values and different property uses. So we want each area to be able to make decisions on these types of things. So they're very similar, and so we kind of do a balancing act for staff ease and just, you know, so that for public's ease. We want to try to make them as similar as possible. However, one area, we have something in there called amortization, and that means that after this is passed, so as of last night, those that aren't in compliance have, you know, a period of time when they can upgrade their lighting so they will be in compliance. And so the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission was very adamant about that being a shorter time frame, so they wanted 5 years. And the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission set that at 7. So we're going to honor that difference. One difference that Eastern Summit County had that we liked, that we added to the Snyderville Basin Code, is a provision that instead of replacing lighting, there's some things you can do that are fairly simple to bring it up to code. So if you shield the top and put some type of a translucent or opaque lining within your glass, and that is available, and use a lower watt bulb or equivalent, then those would be deemed an exemption.
So what we've gone to, though, is these LED lights, and what we, you know, while they save energy, they're also a little bit brighter.
Well, they have an equivalent wattage. So it's 60 watt or its equivalent in LED. And you part of that code language says that you can't see the actual bulb through whatever material you use to create the opaqueness.
So those are for the fixtures.
Because clear glass won't be allowed anymore.
All right. Last week, that's fixtures. But last week you also talked about the issue of interior lights beaming out of big glass houses. So how did the council resolve that issue?
Well, we didn't. It was one area that it would be very difficult to regulate. Are we going to regulate the types of designs people can have in their homes? You tend to see more of that interior light escape in modern homes, and we weren't sure how we could translate that into the lighting ordinance. So staff will continue looking at that, and, you know, they're going to start by looking at other jurisdictions and what's been done. But at this point, we did not include anything relating to that in the code.
Okay. Still one day left for the state legislature. You have been the kind of liaison down there. At this point, how do you think Summit County fared?
I think fairly well. There was one bill that we've worked on with the health department for over 3 years, and that's public improvement to provide sewer services. And what that does, if the health department and its board declare an area basically a health hazard due to septic contamination, then the county council would have the ability to form an involuntary assessment area. And we could have already done that, but the threshold for citizens, if they want to protest that assessment area, is at 40%. Which is very low. So in this case, it's been moved up to 70% just for this special situation with failing septic system. It's very difficult to form an assessment area for this purpose because you have some property owners that may have already upgraded their septic systems. We have some neighborhoods where they do have a number of failing systems, and unfortunately, some of these properties are so small, there's no room for them to even put in an upgraded septic system. And so we really needed a solution. And again, this would just be used in very extreme cases. But it's another tool in the toolbox.
Yeah.
So that was passed, and we were, in fact, both the House and the Senate passed it unanimously. So I don't even know that I've ever heard that before. So that was exciting. Another one, HB 460, this really affects our jails and court system. It's Medicaid. It's a Medicaid eligibility amendment. And so it allows us to work with the Denver Regional Office to, you know, when someone's arrested, they're no longer covered under Medicaid. And the county covers their medical costs during that time. But then when they go to be released, you know, of course, we're not going to cover them anymore, yet it takes a long time if we actually have to cancel their Medicaid enrollment and then go through the process of re-enrolling them. It just takes a very long time. So we want the ability to work with the Denver office to actually just suspend their Medicaid, and then we can, you know, take that off suspension and have them automatically enrolled once they leave our system. And this is really important to provide a continuity of care. A lot of these individuals are making really good progress with mental health-related issues. And so it may seem like a small thing, but it's a big deal. SB 139, that's what we call the scooter bill, and it limits local oversight and our ability to regulate the scooters. We don't have the ability to prohibit them. We don't have the ability to, you know, put together contracts or agreements with them. It does add a couple safety items that are good, a restriction on driving while intoxicated, and I think there's a requirement for helmets in there. So, you know, those are pluses, but overall, not a good bill.
Well, there was a great piece on scooters and electric scooters and about how they provide jobs and how they provide transit. I mean, it's kind of like that micro transit that Park City was talking about, giving that kind of first mile, last mile opportunity. I've already encouraged people.
It's not that we're against them, but we do want our local jurisdiction to have the ability, you know, whether it's one of our municipalities like Park City or whether it's the county, we want the ability to be able to regulate so we can create a safe environment for everybody. And because of our environment up here with, you know, our weather, and I just don't know if it's even feasible. I mean, they haven't come up here yet, so
we'll have to wait and see. So does this just kind of trump your moratorium that you had been spending the last several months on, kind of drafting some local legislation?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, Kim, I need to leave it there. Appreciate your time this morning. Day 28 now. Good morning. Well, the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission met on Tuesday night. In the studio with a recap of that meeting, I have Commissioner Candace Hart. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's see. You discussed two items in work session. No decisions, of course, in either case since it was a work session item. But let's talk first about the Ivers Family Subdivision. This is up White Pine Canyon Road, approved for a development agreement back in 2004 with 30 units on 210 acres. Now the family wants to revise with 29 units and want to change kind of the buildable lot areas. Those were set so that development wouldn't encroach on open space, wetlands, and stream areas. So what's the rationale for these changes?
Well, there's a couple things going on here, and my information is a little bit different, so I'm not sure which one's more accurate. We were told in the meeting that the approval was actually in 1997, And they've gotten to a point now where if they don't build this, their entitlements expire. And so they have till July 27th to basically get everything recorded. Once they've done that, they don't have to actually build it, but then their entitlements are guaranteed. What they're stating simply is that in 1997, they used information that was available to them at the time, and then and here we are in 2019, and they have better information on wetlands and trees. And really what they want to do is essentially just move some of the buildings around on the space, so to stay out of the trees, as an example. Or they can't really build near wetlands regardless, but they're trying to avoid cutting down trees. And they're really left with just three options, because the big thing for them is if they do this, if you move a building more than 50 feet, that means it's a change to the development agreement. I know this is terribly exciting stuff for everybody, but that actually means that it opens it up to all the current laws and conditions. So now they would have to put in affordable housing and all the other things that would go along with that. So their choices really are, do they just build it as they're already approved? Do they make these changes, which seem reasonable, like to get the houses out of the trees, but then suddenly now they are exposed to current laws? And then I guess C, they have a third choice, which would be let this expire on the 27th, and then they have, you know, their own density that's associated with that land. It would be a lot less. It would be something like 16. Jamie Bracken, the attorney, was saying about 16 units could go in there. So we're looking at something between, somewhere around 29 units. It's 10 lots with 15 different property owners, and they have till July 27th to record this.
But to do the right thing, I mean, I guess, can't you make some kind of special exception? Because, of course, everybody doesn't want to see trees torn down if they don't need to be.
Yeah, no, this is a classic bureaucratic kind of process issue here, where as soon as you do it, then the development agreement is open. And then you kind of ask yourself, like, another question, especially as a planning commissioner, where, as you know, general plan and 2.3 talks about not issuing new entitlements. So you have to ask yourself, all right, well, now would you have approved this to begin with? I mean, most of these things were approved long before we ever became planning commissioners and were kind of left with them. But if someone came before you today and said, hey, I would like to do this, would you be inclined to do that? So you really, it takes you back into like another layer of questions. And then, you know, clearly we don't want them to build in the trees. We'd love to be able to, if they're going to build, not do that. But if it did get opened up, then, you know, things like affordable housing and things that the community wants, you know, then you kind of ask yourself, well, I guess you should push for that, because that's what we're asking for.
Yeah. So what's your reaction? Where are you leaning?
You know, it's hard, because the Ivers family, you know, I don't know them. I just met them, you know, at the meeting. They seem like nice, you know, reasonable people. And you certainly don't want to take away someone's property rights and their ability to do what they're allowed to in their property. If I had my druthers, this would expire, and, you know, you wouldn't have 29 units, and this tree issue would go away, and, you know, they would just have their regular density. I personally, if something like this came before me for the first time, I would not support, you know, a development in there. Clearly, though, once a development agreement's already, you know, been approved, we have to honor it, and that's fine. That's what we do every time, is we have to honor those agreements, you know, obviously by the law. But if I had my druthers, you know, and so everybody knows, the property we're talking about is right by St. Mary's, right by the Catholic Church. It's really that bit of land that the Nordic Track uses, and then up in the trees, kind of as you push back in the hills. We may not really see it. It's not going to be in the open space that's right next to the church. It's kind of pushed back in the trees. But and that's the sort of tough thing, I think, in Park City, right? That's some beautiful property. I'm sure nobody's really looking forward to having buildings there. Maybe even the Ivers family, you know, maybe, I don't know. But it's one of those things where they have a right to do it, and it's their land. And so I guess if I had my druthers, nothing.
So the ball's in their court to decide what they need to do.
Yeah, exactly. You know, these work sessions are really a point where you can just have kind of an open conversation, and they really have those three options.
Okay. Next, you were being asked to look at the new zone, neighborhood mixed use. There's kind of the chicken and the egg question here. Are we looking at the new zone because of the Henry Sigg development, or is Henry Sink presenting a project because you're looking at a new zone?
Right. Hard to say exactly what Henry Sigg is, you know, thinking about here. But I can say absolutely, we've been looking at this idea of a mixed-use zone. We've been working on it for, you know, I guess I don't know the real time, but it's like something in the neighborhood of a year and a half or more. We've done everything from look at various properties and had different developers come in and present to us, or planners, like what they would do in that property with a mixed-use zone as a way to pressure test this idea. But we're very keenly interested in moving forward with the idea of mixed-use zone, regardless of what's happening, you know, with the developer. And that actually became part of the conversation, too, which is, ways you could look at this is like, you know, do you adjust this mixed-use zone to fit this person's development? And clearly my position is no, we look at a mixed-use zone as how we would want it applied across the entire basin. And, you know, the commission was all thinking the same thing and quick to get there. So one of the things that a question I asked was to staff, if we didn't have this development, roughly when would this come up on the agenda? And it sounds like it would come up quite a ways down the road, like a long ways out. So having a developer present this is a really good reason for us to get it on the books and get it up to council so they can take a look at it.
So what are the elements then of this mixed-use commercial zone in terms of residential, commercial ratio, square footage, things like that?
Yeah, and that's actually a really good question on many levels, because there's the ratios of it, and then there's like, when you say mixed use, what does that really mean? Like, you know, someone could come in and check a couple boxes and say, you know, hey, I put a little, and in fact, actually this came up over at Lincoln Station when we were looking at that. They were kind of slotting that in under the idea of mixed use. We didn't have a zone. It wasn't zoned for that. But, you know, they would put some affordable housing, they'd get some condos, they'd have a little commercial to support it. But it didn't really feel like a mixed-use zone to us. I mean, I think when we're talking about it, we're thinking it probably has some live workspace. It's got some retail component of restaurants. You know, if you could imagine a place where on the ground floor you've got retail and restaurants, and on the second floor maybe you have offices, or the third floor you have condos, something to that effect.
Yeah. In terms of the staff packet, that one criteria is that it must be a long transit. At this point, we don't have transit to the industrial park, so would that work?
Yeah, so there's a couple things. As it relates specifically to the staff packet and the information in it this time, one of the things we wanted to do, which we didn't have in front of us, was we wanted to see the mixed-use zone that we worked on. So the developer in this case made a few adjustments, and that's fine. They can propose that, but what we really want to go back to is what is the original framework that we were looking at. Generally speaking, the idea of a mixed-use zone comes out of, it's sort of born from this idea of there's some properties out there that are fairly big, and if you zoned them community commercial so they could put in like a grocery store or something along those lines that people might want out there, it also opens up a whole host of other things they could do with the property, and sometimes you don't want some of those things going in the property. And we see this a lot of times when someone has like a home business and the neighbor's like, what do you mean you can put that business in here? And it's like, it's an allowed use. You can't really say no to it. And so mixed use zone does a couple things. It, one, controls that a little bit. It starts to limit what those uses are in the property. But it was also set up as a way to trade. So if someone has a big piece of property, and there's not too much of this left, but they could say, hey, we'll give you X amount of square footage as open space. And then for that, we'll give you a higher density development in this like corner of the property or someplace. And then, of course, we'd want them to be able to have transit head out there. And, you know, you see this site problem with that whole area as far as public transportation. It's, say, in the Silver Creek Village, where we're looking at affordable units that Mountainlands Community Housing Trust is putting in, and we're starting to see the development come to light now. And it's not about them or anybody else, but there isn't a bus stop out there or a bus. So it's a bit of the chicken and the egg, too. Like, do you put the units in first and then the public transportation comes in, or do you get the transportation in first? And so, yeah, we're working through that part of it right now.
Okay, so what's the next step on this?
Well, right now, on this particular one, there's just kind of like three parts to it. One, the Planning Commission needs to just look at this mixed-use zone. So the applicant is proposing that the mixed-use zone essentially be created. That's separate from their development. So we basically need to take a look at that. Do we agree with the language of the mixed-use zone as we'd want to see it applied, or as we'd recommend it be applied? It's a legislative decision. So with a legislative decision, a lot of times in the Planning Commission, most things we kind of are bound by the law, and we have to just sort of mitigate, you know, things. In this case, though, the public hearsay and what the public thinks comes into play. So if people participated and showed up at the Planning Commission meetings or at County Council when it gets there, they can have some say in this and talk about what they would like to see. So it's kind of a more, it's a little more exciting in that we can now really just take in lots of input. But fundamentally, we got to get it up to council. Then the county council is the one who's going to make the actual decision. That'll be a public hearing process where people will be able to go to a council meeting and weigh in there as well. So they get a couple shots at like being part of this. Once we that's in, that's a possibility. Then the next step for this development is, do we rezone it to a mixed use? So that's the other question. And then the third part would be the development itself.
So how would that change the SIG development if this zone, in fact, were put in place?
Yeah, eventually we'll see a packet, like mm-hmm. the staff will create a packet and show us sort of, here's what it looks like one way versus the other way. When we talk about rezoning, when we get to that second step, generally speaking, it gives them more density in the area. And there's kind of an interesting conversation to be had around density for everybody, in that, you know, sometimes we associate density with population. And population and density are different. It's the density speaks to condensing the uses into an area. And so they might get, say, a three-story building opposed to a two-story building. It could be something along those lines, or it might be, will allow you to get more square footage in a specific area. So it'd be kind of a conversation around that.
Okay. Candace, say thanks for your time.
All right. Thank you very much.
Well, the Park City Community Education Department offering dozens of classes for kids through seniors. In the studio to tell us about some of them, I have Jane Tolley, Park City School District Community Education Coordinator. Good morning to you, Jane.
Good morning.
So classes start when or are underway?
They're underway. So we're in our spring and winter session right now, and we have lots of classes.
Okay. What have you got coming up? Can you tell us about something that people could still register for?
Yes. We have fly fishing is coming up. And that will be April 23rd. And that's a good one. You can bring your kids with you. Under age 18 is okay with a parent. And this also includes a field trip where they go fishing on a river, an actual fishing trip, and it's $139.
Okay. So. And again, this is kids as well, as long as there's a parent that joins them if they're under 18?
Yes. Yes, and we have quite a few people who do that. And we also have glass blowing with Red Flower Studios, and that's exciting to me. I think that glass is a beautiful art, and, you know, the studio is just amazing. I mean, it's fun to be there and see all the creativity, and you actually get to take home two projects. So we have our next class is March 18th, and there's a ton of time spaces, so whatever fits your schedule, we have it. And that's something that I would like to do. It's super cool.
Okay. And you also have some of the regular computer classes?
Yes, we're kind of winding those down, and this will be the last of them. We have iPad 101 and 102 coming up next week, and we also have Microsoft Word 101 and 102 that has been postponed to the last Tuesday and Thursday of March.
Okay. And you also offer Spanish classes, and these, you recommend that what, people start in the fall and then just take it through the year?
Yes, we listened to our students, and the feedback from them was that they felt like they were starting over, so we made them progressive. And we start 101 in the fall, 102 in the winter, 103, and so on in the spring. And it's worked out quite well, unless you forget to register in the fall, then it's a little discouraging. But it, for the most part, you know, they can get through the book and, you know, get a good solid start on speaking the language with, you know, the grammar and the tenses and all of that.
Yeah. So is it more of a conversational based? Is that the focus? Just, I mean, if you wanted to talk with maybe some employees that you've got or coworkers?
You could talk with anybody. Uh-huh. Yeah. So, you know, it's a solid ground so you can actually speak the language. It's, you know, it's a serious class. It involves homework and, you know, group settings and things like that.
Okay. And you also have starting here soon is the guitar classes with Jeff Lawrence.
Yes, he's an amazing teacher. And he's written a curriculum that when you come to class, you get his workbook, and he guides you through this curriculum and gets you playing the acoustic guitar.
Okay. And this is kind of interesting timing-wise. Getting into college 101 without having to pay people off.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Well, actually, the registration deadline for this was yesterday. But I think Sharon Joyce would accept you if you still want to do that. It's a small class. And what they do is they take a test, and it's based on your personality, and it's how to sell yourself, you know, to college administrators to get you into the college that you would like to be in.
Okay. And I know one of your favorite instructors, Pat Runberg, is back with some knitting classes.
Yes. I'm wearing a scarf that Pat made. She's an amazing artist, a fiber artist, and she's also an award-winning artist and a designer. And so she'll be teaching our beginning knitting class that starts April 15th. And from there, from this class, you'll have all the skills that you need to make, you know, knit whatever you would like, actually. And she's really a dedicated teacher. I mean, if you're struggling, she'll meet with you and one-on-one and help you out.
Okay. And you've also got a landscape design class coming up as well.
Yes. That's with Keith Clapier. And the guy, he knows his stuff, you know. And what he wants to do is teach everybody how to landscape with water-saving plants that are native to Utah. And that's always a good idea.
Yeah.
Here.
And then another new class that is offered this spring is with Katie Mullally, who has, I know, taught classes before in terms of how to publish books and things like that. But this is an introduction to Kickstarter as a way to raise money for maybe a book you want to publish.
Yes. Katie did two classes this winter. She did outdoor market survival, and her next class is the introduction to Kickstarter. She just talks people through what she learned as she used Kickstarter to fund her fourth book. And, you know, how could you not want that insider information on, you know, because I think it can be a kind of a complicated process. So she's there to share that, and she's just fun to be around. I love Katie.
Okay. Also wanted to mention, it looks like it may be a day late for this as well as some of the ukulele classes that Bill McInnes is offering.
Yes. So we have a novice class, and those people have taken the beginner class already. And we also have the beginner class that started last night, but it's not too late to join. You can jump in. Bill's fun to be around. He's also, you know, you receive a book with, you know, ukulele chords and instructions in it, and he's there to help guide you through there. I was there last night, and it's just a fun group. And, you know, ukuleles have such a beautiful sound. I'd recommend that one.
Okay. And then we've got some the Utah Rider Education basic courses for motorcycle drivers, riders, and also babysitting training, some of the regulars that you're bringing back. Anything else you wanted to mention?
We have one that's, you know, kind of gets overlooked a little bit, and it's Quick and Easy Braids for Beginners, and it's for parents who want to learn to braid their children's hair, or even people who want to learn to braid. And it's joined, Jennifer from Cookie Cutters in Salt Lake. And I've known Jennifer for years and years and years. And she is brilliant at what she does. And so, you know, if you're in a hurry and you need to get out the door, braid's a simple way to fix your hair, and it stays in place too.
Right. I mean, we think of, yeah, just the basic and French, but she's got all kinds. It sounds like lace braids, fishtail braids, mm-hmm. Dutch braids. Interesting. Okay, anything else you wanted to mention?
I just wanted to talk about how to register. So you can register online at pcschools.us, and there's the compass icon on the main page. And if you click there, it'll take you to the pages where you can register or read about classes, or you can call me, and my phone number is 435-615-0215.
Okay. Hey, Jane, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Well, in a very rare occurrence, the Egyptian Theater announcing the cancellation of a couple of shows in the next couple of weeks. On the phone with details, I have Amber Hansen with the Egyptian Theater. Good morning, Amber.
Good morning, Leslie.
So first, we were supposed to be hearing Dave Mason this weekend, but he's a no-show. What happened there?
Well, he had a bunch of shows last weekend in Colorado, and he had a vocal cord strain. So he went to his doctor. His doctor prescribed, you know, at least 10 days of no speaking whatsoever. So he's not going to be able to sing. So they, you know, they had to pull the plug on the shows, unfortunately, this weekend. And we had him scheduled March 14th through the 17th, pretty much all four nights sold out. So we've emailed everyone. We're going to refund everyone. And I was able to book Iron Butterfly last minute to come in place. And so we are selling tickets to Iron Butterfly. They're at an extremely reduced price, so we can try to fill the seats, and you know, we'll just continue on like normal, where we present something on our stage every single weekend, and hopefully people will come to see Iron Butterfly instead.
Okay, so it's not just an exchange of tickets. You're actually refunding the price, and then people would need to repurchase prices for the Iron Butterfly shows. So that, again, that would be all four nights or just Friday?
All four nights.
All four nights?
Yep, we're going to do March 14th through the 17th. So, yep, you know, we just went ahead and refunded everyone. And if you want tickets to Iron Butterfly, you just have to purchase them again. But, again, they're a lot, like half the cost of what you paid for Dave Mason, so...
Okay, yeah, so if you had the night booked out, go ahead and buy another cheap ticket there. Yeah,
it'll be a good time. And they're on their Soul Experiences tour, so they've been playing all over the country, really great musicians. It's going to be a great concert.
Okay, and then real quick, early next month it was supposed to be the 50th anniversary of Jethro Tull, and we knew that Ian Anderson wasn't coming, but that too was pulled from the calendar. How come?
It was originally... billed to us as the Jethro Tull 50th anniversary tour, and they kept having to change the lineup and the dates, and we just felt like what we made an offer for wasn't the show we were getting. So we felt like we needed to cancel the show for that one and just reevaluate how the Martin Barr tour is going later on. But the Martin Barr concert wasn't what we had originally booked, but they kind of... their booking manager kind of switched things up on us, but and the lineup and the musicians. So we just felt like what we were selling tickets for wasn't what people were going to get. You know what I mean?
Right. So what have you put in that place?
We have Richard Marx playing April 4th through the 7th, which I'm thrilled about. I've been a longtime fan of Richard Marx. He's multi-Grammys, multi-hits.
Okay. All right. ParkCityShows.com or the box office is what, 649-9371, if people have any questions?
Yeah, that's right. And we have really great seats available for Iron Butterfly. We're not holding a bunch of Pharaoh seats in the front, so you've got the pick of the theater for this weekend.
Okay. Hey, Amber, thanks for your time.
Thank you. Have a great one.
That's Amber Hansen and in the studio now with an update from Youth Sports Alliance, I have Executive Director Emily Fisher along with Development Director Janet Dalton. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, Emily, you wanted to just kind of give us an idea of where we are with after-school programs?
Sure, our after-school programs. So our ski and snow programs have all finished up. So as of right now, we've had 1,300 youth involved in our after-school programs for Get Out and Play and Activate and Scholarship 200 of those all of those participants. So we've had a really great year, and then we have spring programming coming up. It's all on our website, ysaparkcity.org. And we have, at the middle school, we have lots of different options. The ever-popular curling. We have CPR at all of the middle schools and junior high programs in case you need that for summer jobs. Glass Fusion, Athletic Republic, beginning mountain biking. And then for Get Out and Play, we'll have mountain biking and bouldering.
Okay, so mountain biking... on the rail trail.
I know it doesn't look like spring out there, but hopefully it's always a bit of a roll of the dice with mountain biking in the spring, but fun for the kids to get out and learn some of those skills for the summer.
Yeah, but they need their own bikes?
Yes, they do need their own bikes and helmets, although we do have some bikes in our inventory. The ever resourceful Heather Sims finds bikes if that's an issue for anyone.
Okay. What about the scholarship program? Is this that time of year where people begin filing applications for the coming year, or is this?
We actually just closed our spring scholarship applications, and we'll be making those decisions in the coming weeks and announcing that shortly. We had the most ever applicants with 57, which is absolutely amazing. And we're hoping to award the most for spring scholarship dollars to date. So,
how much do you have available?
That's still kind of to be determined, but in the range of 50,000. So, you know, typically athletes have applied for spring scholarships for their regional championships, and but now more athletes are applying for summer programming and summer camps and things like that. So, we're excited that we have the funds to award those.
Yeah. So you kind of break it up in two, just in case, you know, if you don't make the regionals, you wouldn't need the money then.
Exactly. Yeah. Or you might need it for summer training.
Sure.
Exactly. Yeah.
So do you think of those applicants, I mean, how many would you be able to hand out? Does everybody get something, or?
It just depends. You know, it's hard to say, but we're hoping that we can award the majority of those applicants.
Okay. And so all of that information, though, in terms of applying for scholarships is online? Is that how people find out about it?
The application is closed right now.
Yeah.
However, if someone is interested in fall, that information will be online in the coming months.
Okay.
Yeah, at ysaparkcity.org.
And certainly the bulk of your funding, I think, comes in with Jan's Winter Welcome. So is that...
Yes. So, you know, we do two major fundraisers a year, Jan's Winter Welcome, which the majority of those dollars go directly back to the 7 winter sports clubs. And then we also have a golf tournament. I'm excited to announce that we've set the date for that for June 3rd. It's going to be at Victory Ranch again. We're very excited that Victory Ranch is partnering with us and appreciative. It's a great course that, you know, you can't get on the general public. So it's a great opportunity for people to play that course and support YSA.
Okay. So registration is underway for that, or?
It is. If someone is interested in playing or purchasing a team, they can contact me directly. So.
Okay. Emily, did you have something else you wanted to mention, or?
Just that we're very appreciative to our sponsors, Vail Epic Promise, Solomon Fund, Rosnil, just for having all of the success of all of those programs. It's also really fun in the springtime to see all of the club athletes that have come through the 7 winter sport clubs make it to regionals or nationals or competing on that national stage, going to Junior Olympics, things like that. It's really neat to see how many athletes from Park City Nation are now spread all over the country competing, and fun to track those results.
Yeah, real quick, just the future of your headquarters. I think you're in a building that eventually will come down, part of the Arts and Culture District. What, have you started thinking about where you go?
I have started thinking about that. We are very lucky in that Park City Municipal has also been a great partner of ours, and they have extended our lease through March of 2020. So we have a year to sort of think about office space and how that Arts and Culture District will develop, and hopefully continue to work with Park City Municipal. We would love to stay within the Park City Municipal, because we now, I think, work with 66 local partners, and so many of them are in the Park City Municipal area. So hopefully we'll be able to find a space and stay within city limits.
Okay. Emily Fisher, Jana Dalton, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:59. It's the local.